Todd Goburn with the Aerospace Structure Series. This lecture is going to be on fastener analysis. So we're not going to go really deep into fastener. We'll actually get to that later. But there's some checks whenever we have a fastener attaching various members that need to be made every time. The first thing is the net area. If you have a part, let's just say it's a rectangular cross-section, and it's, let's say it's just a bar, like a thin 0.1 inch thick by 1 inch wide part, maybe a foot or two long. If you fasten it to another member with a fastener rather than a weld or glue, then you're going to have to first drill a hole through the part. Now that's going to cause a stress concentration in the part, which often will be ignored in the part, although it does need to be considered whether or not a stress concentration factor is appropriate. But the first check will be to ignore stress concentration factors and simply look at the net stress. It is very possible that the peak stress due to the stress concentration is acceptable in the part, even if it appears to exceed FCU. But if the net stress gets too high, the part will clearly fail. The net stress is just calculated by checking the net area. So, for instance, if you have a 1-inch by 0.1-inch part with a quarter-inch hole, you take that 1-inch width minus the quarter-inch diameter multiplied by the thickness of the part, that's your net area. So the first check is to check the net area against the FTU of the material if it's a tensile load. Often, if it's a compressive load, and if you have an interference fit fastener, which means a fastener that fills the hole completely like a rivet, we'll use the gross area for compression loads, which means that we aren't reducing it by the hole. If you're fastener is a rivet, it's driven into the hole so tightly that a compressive load can go right through the rivet and continue on as if the material were continuous. Now, this is not true for tension, but it is true for compression for interference fit holes. Regardless, in our class, if you see a hole, we're going to go ahead and calculate the net area. Once we've checked the net stress against FTU and verified that that's acceptable, we're ready to check the next check. Now the force moves down the part, it moves around the hole through that net area, and then it kind of bunches up behind the hole. Now the stress distribution of contact between a fastener shank and that circular area of the hole on the inside of that hole through the part, the stress distribution is nonlinear, but that's rather complicated, so we grossly simplify the stress. What we do is we pretend that the projected area is valid, which means the diameter of the fastener times the thickness of the part is the projected area. If you just look down, if you take a cross-section through the middle of the hole, that is the area that it appears to be. You can't tell from that cross-section that your area is actually curved and is longer. It's pi d over 2, right, times the thickness. But what we're going to use instead is just that projected area pi d, dt. So the next check we're going to do is the bearing stress, which is the force divided by the diameter and the thickness, p over dt. That is a very simple gross stress of bearing of the one of the fastener on that projected area. Now, even though this is completely nonsensical, the reason we get away with it and it does a good job of representing the stress is because that stress is compared to an allowable that's determined the same way. If they go and they test these fasteners and if they calculate the bearing stress that occurs as P over dt, and they measure the failing force or the failing stress using that approach, then if we do that gross simplification in our analysis, it holds because both were calculated on the same basis. So, first check, net stress. Second check, bearing of the fastener. What this means is, what we've been talking about is a single force on a single part with a single fastener, but often we'll have multiple fasteners, and when we do this check, we will check the net area, or the net stress is the force divided by the actual net area, regardless of how many features cut through this part. But when we check bearing, we're going to need to first determine what's the force transferred in each and every fastener. For example, if we have a row of four fasteners, then the force per fastener is just the force P over the number of fasteners, four. Now, there are things that can cause a load to cheat up on one fastener a little more than the others and on some less than the others. But often, our ultimate check will involve just the force divided by the number of fasteners. We need to be proficient at tracing through how much force is in each fastener. Once we've done that, we can check the bearing stress by taking the force per fastener divided by the projected area DT. They actually wrote a movie about this a few years ago. They called it DT Phone Home. But I think somebody made a typo, and so they started running around with a slightly different variant of that name. Now, once you've checked that the fastener is sufficient in bearing. Okay, so what we're going to do is we're going to take that bearing stress, P over DT. We're going to have to check it against two bearing allowables because there are two parts fitting together. You're going to take the bearing allowable of the plate material, the part itself, and you're going to take the bearing allowable of the fastener. The bearing allowable of the plate can be found in the handbook, in the appendix, or in MFEDS 5 or 9 or whichever one you're using. The bearing allowable of the fastener might be a little more challenging to find, and often this is neglected and not checked. And the reason is not because it's not required, but because it's often less critical. And if it does happen to be less critical, then it is not required. For example, if you have two aluminum parts attached with a steel fastener, that steel fastener is much stronger than the aluminum, and they wouldn't even check for bearing on the fastener. Or if they're attached with a titanium fastener, same story. It would only be if you had like an aluminum fastener and a steel part that you need to start worrying about bearing on the fastener itself, which actually would be poor design. Once we've verified that the bearing is acceptable, the next check is shear. So now the load goes into the bolt. We'll often neglect the bending moment that occurs in the bolt due to the eccentricity of the two lines of action. We'll learn a little bit more about that eccentric load and the bending moment that develops when we get to our next class, 3271. For now, we're just going to ignore. We're going to pretend that these members are thin enough to where the bending moment is negligible in the fastener, and so we'll just magically carry that load into a shear load. If you imagine the two parts and you take a hacksaw blade and you saw the fastener in half right between the two parts, you'll get a cross-sectional area that's the shank diameter of the fastener, and that is the next area that needs to transfer this load. That transfers the load in shear. So we're going to take that force per fastener, divided by that shear area, which for a fastener will be pi r squared, but since the fasteners are not identified by a radius, because a radius would be near impossible to calculate without cutting the thing apart, we use the diameter to characterize what fastener we have, because you can easily measure the diameter of a fastener. So actually your shear area is going to be P divided by the area, and the area is pi D over 2 quantity squared. Therefore, once you know what the shear stress is in the fastener, you can write the margin of safety against the FSU of the fastener itself. Now, a lot of fasteners, while they do have a allowable strength, a lot of fasteners you can look up through from the manufacturer will provide tables of dimensions and allowables, often with shear and axial load allowables. There are also a number of fastener allowables shown in MFPES 9. I have not shown any in the appendix of our handbook, but there are a number shown in Chapter 8 of MMPDS. Since fasteners are also often characterized by their shear and axial strength, as in terms of force, the force that they can carry, then that means we actually often will not even need to calculate the stress in the fastener. We can just take the force per fastener and write a margin of safety against the shear allowable of the fastener as a, written as a force. Now, you don't want to mix forces with stresses when you're checking those. But if you have a force allowable, you need to compare it to a force in your margin of safety equation. If you have a stress allowable, you need to check it against the stress. Once we've verified that the shear is good, so we've checked the net stress, we've checked in the part, we've checked the bearing stress in the fastener and hole, we've checked the shear stress in the part in the fastener, we then are ready to do the same set of checks in reverse in the other plate. If we had two plates attached together, we now have a bearing check in the other plate. We have a net stress check in the other plate. Now here's where it gets a little tricky. We're talking about two fasteners being attached with a single fastener. Excuse me, two parts being attached with a single fastener. That's called a lap splice. If we have two parts attaching to a single part that's between them, that can provide a connection that's called double shear, where the fastener has two shear planes rather than one. In those cases, we then will have to trace our load through and we'll often end up with half the load for the bearing check and the net stress check. Watch the video carefully and read the text carefully. It discusses this case in more detail. So our basic approach is first to look at our connection, which we can call a joint, not like smoke two joints in the morning, but like a joint meaning a connection of parts. We will determine what is the force per fastener. We will check the net stress in the first part, then bearing in that part, then shear in the fastener, and then bearing in the next part, and then net stress in the next part. If we have a single shear condition, then the force will trace through rather easily. If we have a double shear condition, then we'll have to be a little more careful in determining the force in each part. The force in each fastener, in each part, in order to get the correct stresses and margins. These are a critical skill. I've placed this in our handbook right after we cover shear. First we covered axial load, then we covered direct shear stress, and now we go into fasteners and the basic checks for fasteners, which includes that axial stress, which is a net stress, and it includes the shear stress that occurs on the fastener. We introduced that bearing stress. We also dealt with a couple special cases of bearing in our handbook and in the lectures. These need to be second nature. These kinds of checks are made daily by many strength analysts in industry. Later, when we get to 3271, we'll learn more details of handling more complicated connections when our loads aren't clearly, when it's not so obvious what the force per fastener is, how to determine that. For now, we need to be masters of this. Later in this class, we will learn how to evaluate, calculate how much shear force occurs in a cross-section when it consists of multiple members bolted together. For now, please make sure that you've mastered this material on the basic checks that we make, strength checks that we make at a fastener or a joint. Okay? Enjoy.